And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We recorded this segment earlier. Spiders may be one of the most feared and disliked creatures on Earth, but one local researcher has spent a lot of time with them recently. Here's our pre-recorded interview. And joining us now on Cincinnati Edition is Dr. Nathan Morehouse. He's an associate professor of biology at the University of Cincinnati. Dr. Morehouse, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Michael.
Honestly, reluctantly am I having you here because you've been spending a lot of time with some very tiny, terrifying creatures. They're called the jumping spider.
That's right. Yep. Most people are terrified of spiders, but they shouldn't be. They're really quite harmless, and they do all sorts of fantastic things for us in the world around.
What kind of fantastic things are jumping spiders doing for us?
Well, they eat a ton of insects, and they oftentimes specialize on insects that we would rather not have around. Mosquitoes, fruit flies, crickets, things that we also are a bit scared of, maybe should be more scared of given how dangerous mosquitoes are, for example, for human health. Whereas jumping spiders have no threat posed to human health whatsoever. They're about the size of your pinky fingernail at largest, and so they're small, helpful members of our communities, but I understand that a lot of people are creeped out by them.
Well, we tend to lump spiders all into just that one umbrella term, right? So maybe we think that what we may commonly refer to as even a daddy long legs or a jumping spider, whatever, has the same type of ferocity as a tarantula or something that might be worse than that, something poisonous and scary. Why do you think that is? Why is it that these little creatures are so scary to so many people, including me, I must disclose?
Well, I think we have a tendency to generalize things. We're scared of all snakes, whether or not they're a rattlesnake or a garter snake. And that's a helpful urge because it's useful to avoid something that could be dangerous before you really sort out if it's dangerous or not. But in the instance of spiders, nearly all spiders are quite harmless to people. And so it might be useful to be afraid of the really dangerous ones and that we transfer that fear towards the ones that really don't cause any harm.
So there's no truth that like we're swallowing a whole bunch of spiders while we're sleeping or they're crawling all over us in our bed or anything like
No. Those are just sensationalist headlines, really.
Well, I appreciate you for alleviating my fears over sensationalist headlines, but we do have you here to talk about some very serious research that you're conducting. And you at the University of Cincinnati were fortunate to get to use half of a $2 million grant from the National Science Foundation. This was awarded back in 2018, and you're not just studying jumping spiders in general, you're studying their vision.
We are. Jumping spiders are unusual in the spider world for using their vision much more than other methods of collecting prey. They don't make big capture webs like the orb web that most people are familiar with. Instead, they have to stalk their prey. Actually, the Chinese word for jumping spider is translated most literally to fly tiger. And this is really a good description of what they do. They have to stalk their prey around environments using vision to identify it and then jumping on it to capture it. And so their vision is really a fascinating microcosm of how animals see the world. We're asking more general questions about the way that animals see the world, but using jumping spiders is a good example of that.
So you may learn about other parts of the animal kingdom through this study?
100%. The thing that this grant is particularly focused on understanding is why animals see color in the world. And that may seem like a fanciful thing, but color is such an intuitive and important part of the way that we experience the world that we oftentimes forget that many animals don't see color very well, if at all. As a matter of fact, most mammals don't see color well at all. Your dog or cat at home sees color very poorly. They just see the difference between blue and green, but they can't see oranges or reds. So their world of color is much more restricted than ours. And jumping spiders present a really fascinating opportunity to understand what the value is of seeing color in the world around. Because across this big group of animals, there's as many kinds of jumping spiders in the world as there are kinds of mammals. There are a huge variety of different ways in which these animals see color. Some of them see the color very poorly, and some of them see color much better than we do, actually. And so it gives us a chance to try to understand why those differences are there.
So where do we find jumping spiders? Are they in University Heights? Are they in Clifton? Or do you have to traverse the globe to find the ones you're looking for?
Well, they're everywhere. They're everywhere, every continent but Antarctica. They're up in high alpine meadows and down in lowland rainforest or along beaches. They are here in Cincinnati, but they're also everywhere else in the world. So it's a good excuse to travel as well.
And you've done that. Tell us some of the places that you've gone so far. This is like a 5-year study, right? And so you're already underway, and tell us some of the places you've been.
It is. So we're working with a large international team. We have researchers in Hawaii and in Florida, in Canada, and we're also partnering with researchers from around the world. And thus far, we've had the opportunity to work in India, Singapore and Malaysia, South Africa, and different parts of the United States already studying these jumping spiders to get a sense for the diversity in this group and the different ways in which they see color in these different environments.
Well, I know this is going to be a relatively long process of gathering data so that you can do a full report on this, but what have you learned so far that maybe you didn't know before?
Well, we're learning that jumping spiders have changed over deep evolutionary time, have changed the way they see color, and sometimes in surprising ways. So some of your listeners may be familiar with peacock jumping spiders. They're colorful. They have been a YouTube sensation, and the male peacock jumping spiders raise up their abdomens and have bright colors and patterns on their abdomens that they wave around to females. And we've discovered that they have independently evolved the ability to see color as well as birds of paradise or other birds. So they have 4 different color-sensitive cell types in their eyes, whereas other groups that are much more drab oftentimes only have 2 and therefore can't see the world of color quite as well. But we're also discovering the ability to see color quite well in some groups we wouldn't anticipate, some relatively drab groups that you wouldn't look at and say, oh, yeah, that animal is definitely using color to communicate. And those present a little bit more of a puzzle because now we have to unlock what they're using that ability to see color for. Are they using it to do a better job of hunting down prey in the forest environments that they live in or to avoid toxic prey that's brightly colored? So we're finding really interesting paradoxes or puzzles at the same time that we're solving some that we knew we already had to try to figure out.
Well, I have to ask a very obvious question. How do you know the spiders can see color?
That's a great question. We have to use a variety of approaches. One is to study the way that their retinas respond to light. So our retinas have 3 different color-sensitive cell types in them. They're called cones. And you can study our color vision at the level of our retina to measure the response to light of our red or green or blue sensitive cone cells. And we could do the same thing with jumping spiders. And that's work that we accomplish most often here at the University of Cincinnati. We can also study it at the level of behavior. And so we have to set up little tasks for these jumping spiders to complete that would require them to be able to see a color in order to do it properly. So we could teach them that something bright red is toxic or is delicious, and then we can give them choices between that and something that's a different color like green or orange, and we can see if they reliably pick the right answer there. So we do set up little tests for them as well to make sure that they can actually execute color decisions in real life.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're joined today by Dr. Nathan Morehouse. He's an associate professor of biology at the University of Cincinnati. He's part of a team that was awarded half of a $2 million grant from the National Science Foundation to study the vision of jumping spiders all around the world. And Dr. Morehouse, I imagine as a fan of science, as a student of science, that you're also a fan of National Geographic, so it must have been very exciting when you were included in that publication in an online article from 2017. So even before this grant was awarded, you had a moment on Twitter. And instead of having me read the article back to you and our listeners, why don't you help us set the scene? I'll give the headline. It says, "We've learned jumping spiders can see the moon thanks to Twitter." And you were part of this little back and forth on Twitter.
Yeah, so this was a completely unexpected thing that started in the middle of the night for me. So I was up watching the Pens hockey team. They were in the Stanley Cup Finals. They'd lost. I was a bit bummed out by this. It was 12:30 in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I just decided to check my phone and looked at my Twitter feed, and I had 100 notifications. it took me about 20 minutes to try to figure out what had even happened. And what had happened was there was a group of astronomers at the University of Washington who had had an infestation of jumping spiders in their offices and couldn't figure out how to get rid of them. And so as good scientists do, they began to play with them, and they were playing with them with laser pointers. And they found that these jumping spiders would chase around green laser pointers more than red laser pointers. So they were being scientists with these jumping spiders. And a friend of mine roped me into this Twitter feed where they were recounting this. And so I started to respond, telling them why jumping spiders should respond to green laser pointers better than red laser pointers, because the ones they were playing with could see green better than red. And then we got into this whole discussion about how jumping spider eyes are built like telescopes and what could they see in the night sky. It was delightful.
Well, I guess nothing gets you out of a post-loss slump faster than a little Twitter debate about spiders.
Well, I was totally amused by it. I had a great time. Went to bed, woke up the next morning to calls from news outlets like Nat Geo, and it just continued. It made my day the next day. And the funny thing was that it resulted in a visit to the University of Washington. I went out there, met with these astronomers, gave a talk to their department. We still talk. We're good friends. And so these are the funny connections that can happen in this
day. This is when Twitter is a great thing, right?
Absolutely.
It has its terrible, terrible corners. But man, sometimes it just brings great things together. That's such a cool story.
Yeah. Was great fun.
Okay. Now, I also understand that in addition to researching vision and its connection and use by jumping spiders, is there something that we might be able to learn about driverless vehicles from this research?
Sure. I hope so.
Okay. Seems like a stretch from me, but I'm a communication student. You're the biology expert. Help me out.
Well, so jumping spiders navigate the world with, some might argue, way too many eyes. They have 8 eyes.
Oh.
And they're covered in little hairs that they can use to sense chemicals and wind movements. They're very sensitive to vibration. So if you can imagine, they have all of this information coming in all at once. And yet they're really quite clever. They can count to 4. They can make plans for the future. They can navigate complicated environments. And they do this fairly quickly. They can do this at what we would call behavioral timescales. They can make pretty quick decisions. If you're chasing them, as I do, trying to collect them, you see them weighing options about how to escape you or where to go. And these are problems that autonomous vehicles face. They're getting an enormous amount of information in from sensors, from radar, from LIDAR, from camera sensors, and they have to make the right decisions on behavioral timescales. And they're doing it right now with liquid-cooled supercomputers in the trunk. That's not sustainable. That's too expensive. So can jumping spiders teach us something about clever ways of sifting through all this information and making the right decisions on the kinds of timescales that we need these driverless cars to do it? This is something that we're beginning to try to explore. What are the neural algorithms, if you will, the ways, the heuristics that they're using in these tiny little brains, smaller than the size of a poppy seed? And could those be redeployed in a clever way to help our technology perform better?
Okay, so how does that research move into the auto industry if it's something that they might use? You know, I mean, how do you communicate with that industry based on the research you're conducting on these tiny little bugs?
Well, the first thing to do is the basic science of it, to really try to understand how these animals go from this flood of information to something that their brains can handle. And that's taking all of that information and trying to get the most important properties out of it. And we can study that at the neural level. We can begin to understand, how do they identify shapes? Do they use edges? Do they discard all of the information that's in the center of something as soon as they know that it's a cricket? And then we can begin asking whether or not similar algorithms for imaging systems in self-driving cars might also reduce the load that that supercomputer needs to deal with. So some of it is simply looking at the shortcuts that evolution has provided to these jumping spiders and asking if analogous shortcuts in image processing might also help.
You're talking about how well jumping spiders can see. Compared to us, it's different because when we're born, I mean, it takes a little bit of time before our senses are fully operational or are reaching their full capacity. I read in the materials preparing for this that these jumping spiders are able to see just as well as their adult parents or adult members of the colony or whatever right away.
Yeah, this was a surprising thing that we uncovered. We were curious about these little baby jumping spiders, spiderlings, and how they might be able to do the same kinds of things as adults do. They have pretty complicated behaviors when they're really, really tiny. And so that's a bit of a puzzle because their heads are so much smaller. And so we studied this, and just a pitch for this being student-led research in my lab. This was an undergraduate student that did this as a thesis, and world-class research, you know. And so what we discovered was that these jumping spiders emerge as teeny, teeny, tiny little spiderlings with all of the equipment that they use as adults to see the world. All of the photoreceptors, these are the light-sensitive cells in their eyes, all of the optics, so the lenses and everything, all intact. Much smaller, of course, so they grow those to be larger in size. And so, yeah, they can see the world in the fine detail that they see as adults from the very first day out of their little egg case that they're born into. How do they do that? Well, one thing that they lose is that they're less sensitive to light. And you can tell this about these little baby jumping spiders. They're kind of stumbly. They look a little drunk, and that's because they can't see the world. They're really literally like you trying to walk around your bedroom with all of the lights turned out, right? You can kind of make out things a little bit, but you're having a hard time seeing things for sure. So when they're young, they're not as sensitive to light, and that probably impacts their ability to catch things in the world around them. But otherwise, they don't have to rewire their brains to accommodate a different view of the world. They can just start learning about the world with the view of the world that they'll keep for the rest of their lives.
Well, you have me convinced that these little guys are quite fascinating. I still don't want to touch one. I watch what you do. But speaking of what you do, what happens over the next few years? You're about 18 months into this right now, less than 2 years of a five-year plan. What happens over the next few years? And then what happens on the other side of it when it's time to, I guess, release whatever it is that you found?
Yeah, so we're in the stage right now. We're really trying to understand global diversity in jumping spider vision. So an important question to try to answer about color vision, I've described that we've measured a number of different ways in which jumping spiders can see color. But this poses some important questions about how they're able to accomplish that. What are the genes that underlie these changes to their color vision? And we're working with Dr. Megan Porter at the University of Hawaii Manoa to understand that question. And so we're sequencing their genomes and we're doing some measurements of where genes are expressed in their retinas. And that'll help us to answer some of those questions. And then, of course, there's the question of, well, what does this do to benefit these jumping spiders? How does it help them in their daily lives? And so we're working with Dr. Lisa Taylor to set up behavioral experiments to try to figure out, does it help them to eat more prey? Does it help them to find their way to specific kinds of insects that they prefer to eat? So asking about these ecological questions as well.
Dr. Nathan Morehouse is an associate professor of biology at the University of Cincinnati, part of the team that will be using half of a $2 million grant for the National Science Foundation to study the vision of jumping spiders around the world. Dr. Morehouse, I do hope you'll come back in at least a few years telling us what you found, but please don't bring any of them in.
I won't.
Thanks for coming
in. Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.